dream. There is a place where justice and peace forever embrace. There, the wolf lies with the lamb. There, in the heart of the holy I am. Where is that dream? Where is that place? With so much on earth diminished, defaced. How do we dream? How do we dare see such a vision through grief and despair? Look for a star. Look for a bed where cattle and sheep each evening are fed. Justice and peace, heaven and earth, there will embrace in a marvelous birth. That's an Advent poem by Episcopal priest Thomas Mousen. You may have noticed that Christmas items seem to be out in stores earlier and earlier each year. I feel like this year it might have been late September, maybe early October. And I'm all about Christmas and usually have our house decorated by mid-November. Ruth reminds me that the tree's always up by her birthday, which is coming this Wednesday. But I'm curious how early it will continue showing up. We might actually end up with Christmas in July. We're actually getting a little bit of a jump start on Christmas here at Zion. The worship calendar was laid out, and we had this Sunday marked as the start of Advent. Spoiler, it's not. But some people like to tailgate or pregame before a big game, so we are going to pre-Advent. And I'm personally kind of excited about it. Advent is the arrival or coming of a person, thing, or event. And in the Christian tradition, typically we talk about the season of Advent as a time of waiting and preparation in anticipation of the birth of Christ. And our theme for Advent this year at Zion is people moving towards Jesus. We are beginning this series with words from the prophet Jeremiah. Words that likely would have been proclaimed almost 600 years prior to the birth of Jesus. So it makes sense that we get an early jump on Advent, giving us more time to explore people moving towards Jesus. If you happen to read my prayer email this week, no pressure, you may have noticed I didn't have a prayer for the world section. As I was writing the email that week, I didn't know where to begin. Choosing one thing to pray for seemed inadequate. And exactly what should I be praying for? There's like, where do I even start? The needs are so great. So I said, Spirit, help me. Intercede on my behalf and take to God what needs taken. Sometimes I think we look at the world around us and think, it's too much. There's too much pain, suffering, famine, war, death. Too much and not enough God. We may even think things haven't ever been this bad as they are now. But as I read the passage for this week and studied what was happening in the world around the time of the prophecy, I was reminded this isn't God's first rodeo with a world that seems in shambles. Ideally, I would have hoped that we would have learned some things from the world as it was 2,600 years ago. Maybe we have. But we're human, and we continue to make poor choices, and as a result, the world we live in is not as it should be. As we remember the birth of Christ during this Advent season, we're also in a space of waiting for Jesus to return again, when God will redeem all of creation, and what a day that will be. The passage for today was just three verses. But as we know, it's not usually good just to take three verses and not look at the context around them. So what's going on? at least in the part of the world where this prophecy is being spoken. Jeremiah, the prophet who spoke, was actually in prison. Sound familiar? Last week, Sarah shared that Paul was writing to the Philippians while he was in prison. So it's good to remember we never know where the good news of God will come from. I'm glad that I'm able to stand here and speak this morning from a place of relative comfort and safety. I wonder, though, would I have the courage to speak up in situations that could land me in prison? I did my chaplaincy placement when I was in seminary at a medium security prison. It's a disconcerting feeling when you walk into one section, a gate closes, and the gate in front of you is still locked, and you keep going to the next and go through multiple gates. There's a heaviness within that space, but I always knew that I could walk out whenever I wanted. But how does one keep faith and hope alive, not knowing if or when they will ever leave that space? The same can be said about any time throughout history and even today. How do we keep our faith and hope alive when violence, injustice, and so many things seem so wrong? Jeremiah found himself in prison because he had actually been speaking truth about God. Truth that God had given him to share. And he was actually imprisoned by Zedekiah, the king of Judah, for whom he was prophesying. He had told Judah that they would be judged for not holding up their end of the covenant. Jeremiah wasn't wrong. Jerusalem was under siege by Babylon, and eventually Jerusalem would fall. Zedekiah didn't like what he was hearing. Thus, Jeremiah was put in prison. While Jeremiah remained in prison, another word of the Lord came to him, saying that Judah would be restored one day. Restoration, of course, comes after destruction. Jeremiah then shared the verses that Sadie read for us. And I want to think a bit more about verse 15, which reads, "In those days and at that time, I will make a righteous branch sprout from David's line. He will do what is just and right in the land." It's said similarly in Isaiah 11, where a shoot shall come out from the stump of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of its roots. And earlier in Jeremiah 23, it says, "The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, and he shall reign as king and deal wisely and shall execute justice and righteousness in the land." Very similar to today's verse. Our verse isn't the only prophetic word about this branch or shoot from the line of David. And as Christians, we often call these messianic prophecies, ones proclaiming the coming of Christ. Jeremiah says that the branch will do what is just and right in the land. Other verses will say execute justice and righteousness. It's not uncommon for justice and righteousness to be used together in the Old Testament when referring to God. One scholar says, together, those words refer to fair and equitable relationships among people, impartial law courts, the protection of the weak from the strong, justice, and the personal characteristics, righteousness, that makes such conditions possible. Another scholar writes that they are fundamental theological tenets about God's nature as creator and ruler, and about God's redemptive purposes for the world. Two small words, just and right, have implications beyond our comprehension. And many translations will also read, justice and righteousness will be done in the land. The Hebrew word for land, eretz, is also for earth. So this justice and righteousness that is being executed will be for all the earth. This prophecy isn't just for the people of Judah and Israel, but it's something for all people, for all the earth. This prophecy speaks of God's commitment to God's promises to God's people, even in the midst of destruction due to wars and rebellion. The people are doing the opposite of justice and righteousness. But God will not let that stand in the way of honoring the covenant. We would say that Jesus' birth was a partial fulfillment of the prophecy. Jesus is that branch from the line of David, and Jesus truly embodied justice and righteousness, modeling that in his life as a way for us to live. In case you haven't noticed, we haven't gotten it figured out quite yet. But we anticipate the return of Jesus that will bring this prophecy to fulfillment when all the earth will be redeemed and God's just and right ways will cover all of creation. This prophecy from Jeremiah was spoken nearly 2,600 years ago, and people had already at that point been waiting for numerous millennia, and we continue to wait. How do we wait well? Is it possible to maintain hope after this long? It's hard to imagine a just and right world when nearly 47% of the world's population lives on less than $6.85 a day. When there are on average 400,000 children in the foster care system in the U.S. on any given day. When over 45 million acres of land have been burned by wildfires in Canada this year alone. When 828 million people regularly go to bed hungry around the world. When there are nearly 1.8 million new cancer diagnoses each year in the U.S. When the Lacey Spring Food Pantry has to provide roughly 140 families with food each week. When more than 10,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed since October 7th, with more than 4,000 of them being children. When anti-Semitic incidents have risen by more than 400% in the U.S. since the Hamas attacks on Israel. When one person dies by suicide every 11 minutes in the U.S. And when close to 8% of our neighbors in Rockingham County live below the poverty line. These things aren't just or right. These things may or may not be impacting our daily lives, but each of us have things in our lives that aren't just or right. Maybe a relationship with another person, ourselves, or even with God. There are things in our lives that need to be made right. In the call to worship that Becky used, it read, "Let's be honest. Let's admit right now what we want most is foolproof evidence that God exists and knows we're here. That can be a hard thing to admit. Sometimes we look at what's happening in the world around us and we ask ourselves, where is God? Is there a God? I believe in God, but why does God continue to allow the world existing to exist in this way? Why has Jesus not returned and fulfilled this prophecy? What is God waiting for? Shannon Dykus, who was here a few weeks ago, in her new Advent devotional, writes in her introduction about this idea of waiting. Our tendency might be to ask, what is God waiting for? But might we consider how we are waiting and what we are waiting for? Shannon says it so well that I'd like to just read a few paragraphs from her book. We spend much of our lives in waiting rooms, literal and metaphorical. Those difficult, sacred, in-between spaces of life where we don't know the outcome. So many of our days are anticipatory, held in short waiting periods until the other side of meetings, test results, that next birthday. These are often layered on top of longer seasons of waiting. Once I finish school, when we have enough money, after the kids grow up. Instead of allowing us to hold space for these unknowns, many of our cultures have taught us to expect, have in fact demanded, that we produce specific, measurable results. To respond with, I don't know, or to sit with what is most true, rather than push past it towards an immediate resolution, is considered irresponsible. We have become incapable of waiting well. To compound our impatience, we categorize experiences of waiting, unknowing, and confusion as seasons of darkness. Anytime we cannot see and control our spheres, we name it as dark and separate it from the reach of God. But the winter tree hangs naked for months, and pregnant bellies protrude gradually, and the Magi traveled for months following the star to find Jesus. That time was not wasted. Between daylights, divine work endures. In these spaces in between, there is room for us to engage the work of God. Even as these empty in-between spaces call us to wait, the invitation to be present persists. The season of Advent captures the essence of this invitation from the empty in-between. What if we understood that we could be both anxious and faithful? What if we were able to recognize the presence of fear and God at the same time? What if we reframed our sense of waiting periods to notice divine presence? In Advent, we find ways to keep listening for God when we don't know the answers to our questions. This liturgical season, when we await the promised birth of our Savior, holds deep resonance for our desires to be faithful in waiting. Advent embodies unknowing and uncertainty and waiting and faithfulness. And I believe that God uses Advent to call us beyond the language the fears and traditions that limit our ability to anticipate the sacred. That preaches. Where is the divine presence in our world? Amidst much pain and between daylights, where do we see God? In 2021, 54,240 children were adopted from the foster care system. Organizations like Bread for the World, a Christian advocacy organization that urges U.S. decision makers to do all they can to pursue a world without hunger. Their mission is to educate and equip people to advocate for policies and programs that can help end hunger in the U.S. and around the world. The U.S. cancer rate, death rate, has fallen 33% since 1991. The decline is attributed to steady progress, to improvements in cancer treatment, drops in smoking, and increases in early detection. The Lacey Spring Food Pantry has the ability to provide food to 140 families each week through donations from individuals and businesses and many, many volunteers. Mennonite Action, a movement of Mennonites using their voices as powerfully as possible for the cause of peace and justice, mobilizing fellow Mennonites and Anabaptists across the U.S. and Canada to use creative, nonviolent actions to demand a ceasefire, to end the U.S. and Western-funded occupation of Palestine, and build for lasting peace. And in 2022, 988, a suicide and crisis lifeline, was made available in all 50 states. The number received more than 5 million calls the first year. There is still much injustice and unrighteousness in those spaces. But when we only focus on those first lines, we miss the divine at work in those sections that I've highlighted. May we continue to notice and name the divine at work in our world. We have to hold the just and the unjust in faithful anticipation, knowing that God sent Jesus once and believing he will come again. Look for a star. Look for a bed where the cattle and sheep each evening are fed. Justice and peace, heaven and earth, there will embrace in a marvelous birth.